This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
We have Facebook, Instagram, X. What about Gander? A new social media platform called Gander Social is aiming to provide a homegrown alternative for Canadians who are looking for new ways to connect online. They build themselves as an alternative to the U.S. tech giants with a focus on data sovereignty and healthier online discussions.
Sovereignty, whether digital sovereignty, data sovereignty, or AI sovereignty, has been the hot-button issue in Canada for months. Governments have shifted policies in the hope of addressing the issue, the public has professed interest in Canadian alternatives, and the business community has rushed to meet that interest. But what does it actually take to create a true sovereign alternative? We now have a live experiment with Gander, a new social network that looks a bit like X or Blue Sky, but with data sovereignty. The company has worked to ensure that data remains in Canadian control and developed identity systems that may offer a preview of what's to come if the social media ban in Bill C-34 takes hold. Leading the way has been Ben Waldman, Gander's co-founder and CEO. He joins me on the podcast to talk about Gander's origin story and to walk through the real-world challenges of creating a sovereign social network. One programming note before we get to my conversation with Ben. The podcast has been on a long run over the spring and summer, and it's time for a break. I'll be back with new episodes in September. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, glad to be here. We've talked about this long enough. I'm glad we got to finally do it.
Yeah, so am I. I mean, this is one of the most, I think, really interesting digital social media stories going on in Canada. And so it's long overdue to have you come on and talk about it. Why don't we start really with the origin story for Gander, which grew out of an elbows up moment. We perhaps are having another one now as we record this week. You know, there was a lot of emphasis on Trump's annexation talk, U.S. control over Canadian data, as that being at least part of the inspiration. For those that haven't signed up yet, can you explain what Gander is and what makes it different from some of the other social media services such as X or Blue Sky?
Yeah, well, so we started it exactly as you said. It came about when Trump was elected the second time, second possibly of many. It really wasn't just the moment of the 51st state talk. It was really the lead up. Like any election cycle, it was contentious, especially on social media, you know, not just on Truth Social, but on, you know, everything going on X at that time. And, you know, Blue Sky had really just taken off as a result of Elon Musk taking over Twitter. And so there was a lot of, you could just see over the last decade that social media was becoming more and more based around outrage. And that's what was keeping the eyeballs there. And that aspect of it was really a huge impetus for this, because it wasn't just that we, you know, Canada's technology relies so heavily on the US, but that we all are just so manipulated by social media. And we can see just so much division happening in Canada as a result of, you know, trolls and bots and misinformation, and an effort to manipulate us, that between the two things, it seemed like a no-brainer to at least try to create something new.
Okay. I mean, and that's, you know, obviously, you know, I think there are many that thought the same. They were looking for alternatives that weren't those US-based alternatives. You launched in beta some time ago, but you launched more openly about a month ago. Can you talk a bit about how it's gone so far? What's it been like once you move from that beta world to one where you're literally inviting everybody to sign up?
Yeah, it's interesting. So, you know, early on, we had a lot of interest, again, the whole elbows up thing. So about 47,000 people signed up for early access. And a huge chunk of those people also signed up to become beta testers. We had 10,000 people sign up to be beta testers, which is just outrageous to me. You know, you would normally, you might accommodate, a couple hundred or 20 is fine. And we very much wanted to make this based on community feedback. It's what we started with was what do people want out of social media? And overwhelmingly, those were things like, a place where I'm not manipulated, where there's, less misinformation. I'm not getting trolled. And so we wanted to continue with that. And so we actually brought on 7,000 beta testers. So we kind of had a community before we ever launched. And then really we hit the ground running because we did a we raised money through community as well. Like we didn't, there was no money from government to be had. Venture capital wasn't a fit for us. And so we had done equity crowdfunding where 2,500 Canadians invested in Gander. They're now our partners. And w that money only really started to come in at the end of last year. So we started developing really quickly. And in December, January, started inviting in the beta testers and more over about the month's time. And really just building, get feedback, change things. Building, get feedback, change things. And it's still kind of that way right now, really. Like, I think most people would expect a finely polished app to be in their hands from the get-go, but we it's not something that we wanted. We were like, okay, this is going to be we're it's not $20 million or $20 billion we have behind us. We've got 2 million, and we need to do this in a way that people feel ownership. And so we kind of were like, yeah, we're the app is in a place that people can post and they can comment. And so let's launch it. And so it's been a whirlwind for sure.
Okay, no surprise. Now, the one of the reasons I really wanted to, of course, have you on was to talk about some of the data sovereignty issues, because that kind of sort of from my lens is kind of the calling card when it comes for Gander. It's been a real focal point. And I want to get into some of the specifics about sort of some of the steps that you've taken. But I guess just that at a first step, kind of high level question, just how hard is it to create a Canadian sovereign social network?
It's so I've never done this before. It's the first for me of any social network. And so it's absolutely left. I mean, we all know social media from the outside, right? The mechanics of what happens behind it, moderation, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But the technology side, adding the layer of sovereignty to that, like data sovereignty, as opposed to say like cultural sovereignty, it's not easy. Like Amazon, Google, Microsoft, they've built things so that at a press of a button you can spin up a server, a cloud instance, more or less. And there are plenty of DevOps people out there and technology people who know how to do this stuff. To do it in a sovereign way on open source technology is a little more specialized, and finding the right people to do that in and of itself was a challenge. And then finding the actual supplier for it was huge. Early on, we started working with a company called ThinkOn, who does a lot of provisioning of cloud services to the federal government, and they are completely sovereign, open source. And we did a lot of work with them. And then really no fault of theirs at all. It was on our side. We didn't have the chops to build this thing the way we wanted to. We pivoted and had to pivot quickly, and ended up pivoting both on who was building this for us and where we hosted it, like very, very quickly. And so we're now working with both OVH Cloud, which is a French company with a Canadian arm, French from France, that has sovereign cloud here in Canada, also open source. And now we're working with ThinkOn to ultimately bring Gander onto their platform as well. With the idea that it would be great to have multiple suppliers in Canada. There just aren't a whole ton of them out there, really.
Okay. I mean, I'm happy you raised that process of selecting providers, because it was certainly something that I wanted to get to. Now, OVH Cloud may ring a bell for some of the listeners who focus on case law when it comes to some of these issues, because about a year ago, an Ontario court ordered them to hand over some RCMP data that was stored on their servers in France, and I believe the UK and Australia as well, based on the fact that they had that commercial presence in Canada. Now, if that sounds like a lot of the concerns that Canadians have about US courts doing the same kind of thing, it's because it is basically the same kind of thing. Can you talk about the concerns that you might have had, or are there concerns about having a French-owned entity that's one of your lead providers here? And I guess just how hard is it to avoid some of those large US players when you're looking to make moves in this space with looking for this kind of services?
So certainly there's, there's always going to be a little bit of concern no matter what if it's owned by a foreign entity. Everything that we've looked at and gone through with, our DevOps people and legal and everything else is what their our instance with them is very sovereign as compared to Amazon or otherwise. And certainly our immediate concern is the US. This move to ThinkOn is important to us to ensure like complete sovereignty. Though I think, as a decentralized network, which I can explain more if you like, but I suspect a number of your listeners understand that. We're hoping that we can find enough balanced solutions across the country that others can participate in the network that we're building. Like, this isn't all about Gander owning everything. It's quite the opposite. And so I think that right now OVH is a great solution. Could that change in the future? Absolutely. And then certainly companies like ThinkOn, of which there is only one ThinkOn. Like, there really isn't a lot of people in Canada doing this. More and more are spinning up. Like, I did just get an email from someone who's doing a sovereign Fediverse cloud supplier service in Montreal, I believe. And so more of these are turning up, and then a lot of them are just reselling ThinkOn as well. It's my the rant of my morning is that in the year since Donald Trump, year plus since Donald Trump was elected, that we've been focused very much on cloud, and compute for AI, but building the infrastructure for everything else that we use day to day, where is it? Why are we not supporting this? And our hope is that more and more will come up.
Okay, it's interesting. I mean, that question of how important infrastructure is as part of addressing data sovereignty concerns is an issue that I think comes up repeatedly as part of this debate. I mean, the OVH case, sort of a case in point. How much do you think location alone can address this issue, ensuring that you've got this in Canada, and how much of it is location plus
Oh,
legal, plus regulatory, and the like?
yeah. Location matters almost nothing at all, really. Unless you're prepared to, sever connections with the other nations, like, or pull a Cory Doctorow and just crack open the source code and reverse engineer and really location doesn't matter as much as those laws, because as soon as another country can open up your data with legal demands or just a stroke of a pen, doesn't matter where it is. And that's kind of what the internet is like anyway, right? Like, it is not about a single place. I do think that Canadian owned and Canadian controlled is more important. And I think by virtue of, protecting it from in a physical sense, having it in Canada is the logical thing. So yeah, it's a real challenge that we're up against.
Yeah, no, I and that comes out a bit in your privacy policy, I think. It talks about personal information being stored on sovereign cloud in Canada, but it notes that identity verification, security monitoring, crash reporting may involve personal information that gets processed, stored, or accessed outside of Canada. So, I guess, I mean, you've made an obvious a choice here that kind of answers the question, but data sovereignty in terms of where the data flows are and where they are stored. Do you have to have a situation where everything's in Canada, or is it really more about effective control over that information wherever it happens to be located?
Yeah, I think it's effective control. I mean, the reality is the internet, I mean, just our for lack of a better term, let's call it fiber optic. I'm not much of a tech person when it comes to like the hardware of the internet. However, my understanding is that there are five points across the country where basically our Canadian internet flows through the US. And interestingly, I believe they are all cities or states where there are the presence of the NSA. And this is secondhand, and I'm completely, I may be wrong. I may be wrong, but that's how it was told to me. But that's also the nature of the internet. It would be really sad if all we had was a Canadian internet and we couldn't, communicate with the outside world. That doesn't really do a lot of good. And yeah, I think that that ultimately it's not about isolation. It's about making sure that we have at least a base that is protected, so that in the event of an actual true emergency, our data is here, our internet is here, and we can't be cut off by someone else.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the data side. There's an identity side here that's quite interesting, I think, with Gander as well. Can you walk through what a user has to do in order to post on the service? I know there's real verification requirements. Can you describe what those are, and what kind of effect are you seeing in terms of some of the friction that that might create?
Yeah, there's definitely friction. There's no question. So when we started Gander, and eventually raised capital and everything, we knew that we were facing A, behemoths, B, a huge challenge in social media being misinformation, bots, the rise of AI, and then of course people trolling. And we knew we wanted to create a space that was based in values that we all subscribe to by virtue of living in Canada, and have a space that's moderated in the spirit of the charter. So, and we can talk about more of that in a second. But part of that was recognizing that there's no way a company of our size is going to start building AI to detect AI. And our moderation team is only ever going to be so big that we can hunt down every troll or manually spot misinformation or even rely on a community to report this stuff for us entirely. And as a dad, the biggest thing for me was I do not want to wake up tomorrow and be in the news. Gander has been used as a place for grooming, child sexual abuse material, for that kind of thing. Like it was immediate. No, I'd rather not do this than end up in that position. And so between all those things, we said, okay, so we've got to implement some verification here. Like we've got to come up with a way to do this that's as least invasive as possible, where we don't collect the data because we don't want to become a vector for cyber attacks. Or end up in the paper tomorrow with a leak of data, the same thing. And so we started looking at solutions. We came up with a couple of interesting ones that we thought we might be able to pull off, like to prove you're human, adult, and Canadian, because for now we're in Canada, we do plan to expand. Send us a toonie by Interac. In most provinces, I think all, you have to be age of majority to get to be able to use it. It proves you're a human. They've done all their due diligence, but in the end, too complicated. No way to automate it, and Apple and Google don't want you sending money around if it's not through them. And so that one had to be shelved. And then we looked at the kind of the major players in ID verification, of course. So. We came across a whole bunch of them. In fact, there was one that we initially intended to partner with that kind of packed up, but it was actually for the better because it led us to Interac ID as an option. So basically, you sign in using your bank account, and Canada Post with their Identity Plus app. And the nice thing about that is, with Canada Post, one, it's a known quantity to Canadians. You kind of expect them to have your address and your name. And also we get none of the data. So that was really important to us. And also you can actually, if you don't feel safe doing it online, you can actually walk into a post office and do ID verification that way. And so we went with them to start. We may eventually also go with Interac, because a number of people have said they'd be more comfortable with that. But with Interac, you know, we also don't get the data. However, it seems scarier, I think, to most people to like sign in with your bank. So we'll see if about doing that. But then we knew we needed also a solution that didn't involve any of those things. And so we implemented another option, which is institutional email. So if you are at a university, you work for the government, you're in an association, you're in a union. There's about 1,500 different email domains in there right now. You can verify using one of those, your email address from that place. And we're adding more as we go, and we're going to try to add more to give more people access where we know they've already checked that you're an adult, or for in all likelihood, you're an adult. You know, if you're a university student, there's a possibility you're 14 years old, genius, but those will be like edge cases. And they've checked that you're human. And so that seemed like an elegant solution. Now, we also recognize that all of this leaves a whole bunch of people out, people who are unhoused, who don't have ID, people who are agoraphobic or are fearful of using their ID, people who have tattered ID or don't have an email address at an institution. So we're constantly looking for other ways to do this to continue to provide a human service on Gander.
Okay, interesting. So you've really identified, a whole series of different, somewhat innovative ways to try to engage in that verification. I guess it begs the question, in your experience so far, what impact do you see it
Oh
having
yeah.
on people who sign up? So do you get people who download and then suddenly find themselves being forced to go through one of these processes and saying, no, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
Just how much friction does it create? What effect does it have?
Yeah, and well, this is the interesting part is yes, and we knew it would. And it's sometimes we have to remind ourselves that, like, right, we put this friction in for a reason. We knew not everybody was going to love this. We just have to be patient. So that there's definitely that. But the other interesting thing is we analytics on these things have been the last thing on our list because we're trying to be so non-invasive about things. So we've kind of like even basic, like, okay, someone signed up and then decided not to verify. We don't have like really like we can't pinpoint exactly where someone maybe drops off. We have our suspicions, of course, because it makes sense that there are people who would not want to sign up, based on, or not want to verify, even though they have signed up. One thing that we have noticed is there's an additional level of friction because they do have to download, if they're using the Canada Post part of it, they have to download a whole other app. That's a whole other step. Never mind get out your ID. You've got to like download another app, go through that whole process. So that's a pain in the butt for sure. And then there were little things with the Canada Post app that have since been corrected, but where you go through the process, you scan your ID and all that stuff. And at the end, they added an extra step that was for extra security, you can scan your passport. Let me tell you about the number of people. First of all, this is completely unnecessary. We didn't ask for this. We didn't know it was in there. But the number of people that flipped out about that one, and understandably, either flipped out or were like, now I got to get my passport. Like it wasn't clear. It was a weird user experience. Anyway, they've since removed that, thankfully. But still, definitely, there is friction and there's backlash. There's people who just are like, nope. Free and open internet only, please. And that's okay. Maybe Gander's just not for them, and that's fine. But I know that I still don't want to wake up with in the paper for the
Okay.
wrong reasons anyway.
Fair. There's certainly this discussion, especially around verification, obviously has some echoes with Bill C-34, the
Sure.
digital
And our
safety
time data.
bill. and the social media ban for under 16s. Now, doesn't apply in your context. You're verifying already. You're limiting to over 18, arguably creating a safe environment as well. And size-wise, at least for the moment, I'm gonna guess that you're not quite there. But you know, what's your general take on the move towards the ban and some of the things the government's thinking about?
So you know, I've been involved, of course, in a lot of conversations around this, and everything from the one hand that is leave this up to parents, which still to this day I'm like we clearly can't leave everything up to parents. It has not worked. To you know the people who are all for it, I think it's right in spirit. I think that handing over our data to the companies that are already manipulating and abusing of our data is a bad, bad, bad idea. Like this law should come with, you know, doesn't have to be Canada Post, but some kind of sovereign and impartial, I don't know, something. And I know it's complicated because the moment government is involved, that becomes a challenge as well. But you know, whether or using institutional emails like we have, there has to be other mechanisms. I do applaud the idea of, you know, pushing these companies to the platforms to make safer spaces overall, and giving that as a out. I think that's also a space for abuse. It's a little bit amorphous as to how that would be judged and against what. But yeah, certainly handing over data, like here, Facebook, you've only ever done good things with our data before. You didn't know specifically my name and address previous to this, but here you go. Take it. Nothing, what could go wrong? Yeah.
Fair enough. You're certainly not the first to raise that as an issue, and one of the concerns I think with the bill is the government, I don't think, has really figured out that piece. You know, and so in many ways, you've done the heavy lifting of trying to identify how to actually go ahead and do this, and you know, identify challenges along the way. It doesn't feel like in the context of C-34, the government has figured any of that out. They just basically said do it and leave the how for a later date, and the how is, as I think you're pointing out, is really can be really difficult. Two last questions I wanted to hit on. One with respect to the content. We know you engage active in moderation, and Gander viewed as sort of a nicer, safer environment. But there are certainly going to be questions. You've mentioned AI already a couple of times. Do you foresee a prospect of Gander using the posts, images, or other interactions for AI training, or is that something?
Never.
That kind of licensing of content is just off the table and saying, no, that's not what we intend to do.
Until the community demands it, which I don't think will ever happen. No. Like right now we use automated systems that go untrained for the purposes of like early moderation. And very specifically, they will not ever get trained. I could see us use like building our own small sovereign AI, and it would have to pass muster with the community for sure, for things like accessibility, like for creating a more accessible space. Like you know we have we've make it very clear to people that they should add alt text to their images when they're posting, and you know it's a pain in the butt. It is like it's a valuable thing that is also a pain in the butt. Is there an opportunity there to like train an AI that is specific to these purposes that the community, you know, open source and clearly labeled and everything else that will never be used for other purposes so that we can label those images and help users to do that and create a more accessible space. Maybe, you know, we talk about like how can AI be used to help for things like accessibility or for moderation or cybersecurity and those kinds of things, but never for you know, training for the purposes of creating content. That is the antithesis of what we want on Gander.
Okay. No, and it certainly sounds consistent with what you've been describing, but it does lead me to, I guess, to my final question. And that's in many ways the economics of all of this. You know, I guess the fundamental question of whether or not a fully
Viable.
sovereign, independent social media networking Canada is financially sustainable at scale. You know, you're so
Yeah.
AI training is out, surveillance advertising is out, I assume sale of personal information is out.
Yep.
You know, what's the roadmap that allows you to sort of come up with an
Yeah.
answer about how you pay for a sovereign social network?
Yeah, and I think the interesting, like all of those mechanisms that, are the common ones that we associate with social media. You're gonna, sell data, advertise, manipulate, all those things. Those are to keep billionaires billionaires. Those are to and make more of them and investors like interested at all times. And nobody ever points out like the really fantastic chain of restaurants that exists across the country that doesn't abuse of people. Or like I brought up the other day Good Life Fitness. Like a perfectly fantastic Canadian company that is doing really, really well. And I mean, I don't know anything about them in the background, but as far as, on the surface, I don't think there's anything wrong with us being like the small guy who's like providing a great service in Canada proudly. Our idea is to expand beyond that. We think that as we're interoperable with Blue Sky, or that's what we're working on, is to ensure that the same with EuroSky and all those other networks, to be part of those networks. If all we're doing is providing a better space and even half a million people sign up and use it, is that a bad business? Is that a bad thing? Like it, I don't I think we're too hung up on oh, could Gander be the next Facebook? I don't want it to be the next Facebook. And the only way to do that is to do all the things that Meta does. And I don't have a problem with being part of a global movement to decentralize social media and provide safer spaces for humans. And that's not a tagline I will ever write down, but that's effectively what we're doing. I'm okay with that. I'm okay if like, there are half a million more people or a million or whatever number whose kids have a safe space to go when they turn 18.
Well, I mean, that certainly sounds like an important objective, obviously, and a great aspiration. We'll see how all of this plays out, but at a minimum, this you're a trailblazer here, I think, largely because you are doing some of that heavy lifting around what a lot of people talk about in terms of what they're looking for from social media. What the government has highlighted is they view increasingly as a necessity, given some of the geopolitical risks that we see. You're demonstrating both how challenging it can be, and hopefully it'll work out in a way and shows that it's a hard path, but one that can succeed.
Yeah, well, and hopefully we'll see some of them sign up. I'll tell you, like we've had a lot of like congratulations and well wishing and lip service, but I have yet to see any. I mean, I think there's a few like city councilors on Gander right now, but I would love to see some certainly some MPs and others get on there at some point here.
Okay. All right. Well, that's a good way to close with a bit of a call out or
Yeah.
on some of those MPs. They were slow to move to Blue Sky initially too,
Yeah.
and this one here, there's obviously a compelling story to be made. So thanks
Cool.
for the work that you've put in creating this, and thanks so much for joining me on the podcast.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It was great to see you again. And yeah, anytime.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbytes@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbytespod, or follow Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca, or subscribe at iTunes, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.